The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Bringing you the ag information you need, this is Market Talk, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Now, here's your host, Jesse Allen.
Well, overall, the grain trade lower, livestock trade good, follow-through support seen on the day. Tuesday is really a tale of two different complexes. We're going to talk about it here today on Market Talk. Thanks for joining us on the program. I'm your host, Jesse Allen, and great to have you along for the conversations. We take a look at what is happening in the markets and issues impacting farmers and ranchers' bottom lines in rural America. Great stuff lined up here today. It was overall a quiet day once again, but it was still some things of note here to take a look at, I would say, with grains mostly moderately lower. The livestock trade, really good follow-through support there. Energy is a mixed bag with crude oil down a little over 1%. Stocks were quiet as well. Gold a bit higher. So we got some back and forth, kind of two-sided different action here to talk about. Tyler Shaw with AgMarket.net is going to join us here on the show today, coming up in segment two and three, and give us his perspective on the market action on Tuesday as we're gearing up for another USDA report. Thursday, the WASDE report for April. Not expecting a lot of changes, but still, it's a USDA report nonetheless, so there are bound to be some things that the trade is going to analyze very closely that we need to keep an eye on. We'll get Tyler's thoughts ahead of that USDA report and more. Also, I know Tyler's got some good thoughts and insight into this cattle market. Volatile week last week with all the avian flu concerns in dairy cattle. Now two straight days of a nice rebound in futures. So I want to get his thoughts and perspective on that as well. So a lot of stuff coming up here. Great show, great conversation on the way with Tyler Shaw from AgMarket.net. First up, though, want to talk about the markets, get some perspective from Mike Castle with StoneX. He filled in for Arlen Suderman during our midday commentary on Tuesday. And of course, you can find that anywhere you get your favorite podcast. We try to share that around the middle portion of the day. I talked to Mike right around the noon hour, got his thoughts on the trade. We were kind of at the time seeing two-sided action, a quart of beans, but largely slipped the grain markets back to the downside. Moderate pressure there, led lower by wheat on the day. He talks a little bit about some of the crop condition ratings we got out Monday afternoon, a little bit of this early planting progress. He also gives us an update on the fertilizer markets after some interesting news came out Monday from India. So let's listen into that. Here is commentary with Mike Castle from StoneX from Tuesday's midday commentary, starting with the grain trade.
You know, continuing from yesterday, a bit of a boring start to the week here. You know, got our crop progress report from the USDA yesterday afternoon, our second of the spring season so far. Biggest story there, we saw winter wheat conditions holding steady at 56% good to excellent. That's our third best in the last 12 years. Huge improvement from last year. We were only at 27% at this time, so more than double. 9% above the five-year average. Just overall, a lot better winter wheat crop right now than what we saw in the last 2 years, to be certain. You know, on the spring planting side, corn, we're sitting at 3% planted. Really, the only big progress we saw outside of the South was Missouri and Kansas getting rolling. Expect them to keep going here this week ahead of some rains expected next week. Shifting out to the eastern corn belt, you're kind of in a spot where soil temps are there. But, you know, they're looking at some pretty big rains here this week that'll probably slow them down. Mm-hmm. Tomorrow is our biggest insurance date here to get going. That's all of Iowa, eastern Nebraska, southern Minnesota, out into kind of northern portions of the eastern belt as well. Soil temps creeping back up there, kind of getting close to ready from eastern Nebraska through kind of southern half of Iowa. Should, you know, see them maybe get started here in the next few days. But again, they're looking at some rain early next week as well to kind of slow them down. Spring wheat, also at 3% planted, kind of right on schedule, in line with typical for now. Which, speaking of spring wheat, we do also see a headline of some pretty major flooding in spring wheat growing areas of Russia and Kazakhstan. It's kind of early for them. They really kind of get going planting-wise in May, so not really seeing the impact yet, but we'll kind of have to keep an eye on how that subsides here in the, you know, weeks, month ahead, that kind of thing, how that impacts them. You know, big Russian supplies obviously kind of been a big story of why wheat markets have been so heavy here. You know, another thing to keep an eye on the Russian wheat crop, their winter wheat areas have shifted off pretty dry here this spring. They had a great fall, great winter. Things were looking in excellent shape, but over the last 5 or 6 weeks now, they've shifted off pretty dry, you know, could potentially start to see that impact their conditions, maybe walk back the expectations for that crop. Still don't really have any rain in the forecast out there until late April, so we'll kind of have to keep an eye on that. You know, also kind of some issues being talked about in terms of Russian wheat exports, the government kind of making it tough on the private exporters, kind of hanging up some shipments. So another thing to keep an eye on, but, you know, obviously with the overall fundamentals still being pretty heavy here, tough to see much action early in this week.
How about in fertilizer? I know we talked about this yesterday, India slashing their tender. Are we still seeing fallout from that here today?
Yeah, we definitely are. Saw big drops kind of across the board. The U.S. Gulf was falling pretty aggressively yesterday on the urea side of things. That's continuing today, a lot lighter trade, kind of seeing folks take a step back. But again, values dropping again, now seeing April barges trading back below $300. We had one trade in the mid 280s this morning. The Middle East is falling as well, kind of elsewhere around the world, your major supply points, seeing prices walk back just in that fallout. Obviously, that Indian demand, a lot smaller than expected, you know, saw considerable volumes offered at pretty aggressive price ranges. So the supply was out there, you know, especially with China coming back again, that really weighs on markets here, both on urea and phosphate from, you know, essentially the rest of this month going forward. So kind of have to keep an eye on that. Really, it's a matter of when we start to see buyers step back in. But, you know, with values falling like this, sometimes it's kind of a, well, maybe we'll just hang on the sidelines and wait till the last minute to actually step back. But, you know, Europe is one spot to keep an eye on. Their spring demand's been pretty lackluster so far. Maybe this big drop in price kind of perks something back up there. But, you know, we're kind of past our peak season here in the U.S. It's really kind of a waiting game now. And with that position, things kind of continuing to grind lower.
And once again, great stuff there with Mike Castle from StoneX, filled in for Arlen Suderman on our midday commentary on Tuesday. And really good thoughts. Fertilizer market, to Mike's point there, got some things to keep an eye on with India slashing that tender and more. And of course, may not have a huge impact on things here this spring, but maybe for some of that deferred business here as we get into the fall and whatnot. Just some things to keep an eye on and think about for sure in the fertilizer side of the equation. All right, coming up next, again, markets overall on Tuesday. It was pretty quiet. Moderate pressure, corn, beans, and wheat. Largely just no fresh story. And maybe marking time until Thursday's USDA WASDE report. On the flip side, a solid day in hogs and good follow-through in the cattle markets from some of Monday's strength. So maybe we're finding a little bit of a rebound here after all the volatility last week in the cattle trade. Tyler Schau with AgMarket.net is our guest analyst here today on Market Talk, and we're going to get his thoughts and perspective on the grains, on the livestock, and much more. Who knows where the conversation's going to go. We'll talk with Tyler coming up next, back with more on Market Talk right after the break.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Stay up to date and listen to past episodes online at markettalkag.com. Now, back to Market Talk with Jesse Allen.
Sitting in the seat of my old pretty city lights down.
Well, the market trade action we got on Tuesday, the grains were mostly in the red. Moderate losses in corn, soybeans, and wheat. Meantime, the cattle market, though, strong triple-digit gains there. So good follow-through from Monday's strong day as well. We're going to talk about all that and more. Joining us here on the program, Tyler Shaw with AgMarket.net is with us. Tyler, welcome back to Market Talk. Hope you're doing well, my friend.
Doing good. Good to be back.
Well, we were chatting a little bit before we went on the air. We were comparing our bracket positions on the AgMarket.net bracket challenge, and neither one of us won it. I guess we can be at that, but leave it at that. But still, March Madness is over now. I don't know what to do with myself. I guess baseball's going, Tyler.
Yeah, and I kind of enjoy baseball, but I actually thought about that last night after the games. Like, man, I don't know what I'm going to do till August when football starts now. So I guess I have to go outside and actually do some stuff.
That's true. Go outside, do some stuff. I will say this week, though, especially this weekend, I will have the soothing sounds of Jim Nance while I nap during the Masters. So we will have that at least here this weekend. And I'm stalling a little bit because there's not a heck of a lot of market news for us to talk about here. Pretty quiet day Tuesday. Let's start in the livestock arena, though. Let's talk cattle, because last week, super volatile in the cattle market. Of course, the avian flu concerns really felt like it had a psychological impact on cattle futures, not so much at the sale barn, but on futures. Yet Monday, we recover a bit. Tuesday here, really solid move back to the upside, some good follow through. I know some folks are maybe mad at me calling last week a bit of a collapse in the cattle market. I'll say sometimes I don't pick the right wording, but a good recovery here. Your take on this whole cattle situation and how we've started out the week so far, Tyler?
Yeah, this is the last 2 days, especially on the fat cattle side, basically clawed back all of those losses that we saw on Friday on that big down day. Feeder cattle a little slower to respond, but having a decent day or had a decent day here. Maybe that's the spark we needed. Fats and feeders both kind of went down to some key support levels, the 62% retracement levels of some of those big moves over the last couple months. So, you know, some support showed up on the technical side. And, you know, it really comes down to what we've been saying for the last several months is we understand that the fundamentals are tight, the cow numbers are low. You know, there's a few things to be paying attention to. Weights, dressed weights have gone up considerably from a year ago. Like, I think it's 20 to 25 pounds per carcass. We're packing on more than we were a year ago. When you add up the number of kills, you know, that adds a lot of beef into the market. So we're making up some, not all, but some of that lack of cow numbers with just higher weights and heavier production. So that's starting to roll into the system. That might have been weighing on this cattle market a little bit, but what we've been saying for a long time is what kills it's going to be what we don't see coming, and avian bird flu infecting a dairy cow and then giving a dairy worker red eyes was not something that we had on our list of things that might wreck it. And so that's why I was saying, we've been saying for a long time, you know, use these opportunities to get some hedges in place for cattle, cow-calf guys, backgrounders. Pretty much all of February, most of March gave us really good opportunities to set some record floors on the cash market using LRP or put options. And, you know, we may get back to those levels, we may not, but I'll still remind everyone we're a heck of a lot higher right now today than we were a year ago.
I was going to say, even with the volatility last week, and I know I'll throw options expiration was in there too, I think added to some things, but that thought, that sentiment, Tyler, still definitely applies here this week, is that, and I'll use your guys' term there at agmarket.net, farming for profit, not price, and apply that to the livestock side. I mean, really, such good levels here to at least do something and protect your downside, because even though this bird flu is kind of working through the news cycle, who's to say it doesn't come back around here in another couple of weeks? There is still a lot of unknown out there surrounding this. And a lot of people made the comment too, that, you know, it hasn't been confirmed, but if it's in dairy cattle, it's probably in the beef herd too. I mean, it just feels like this is a slippery slope, and that's why some protection wouldn't be a pretty smart thing right now, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would echo a lot of the sentiments you had. Like, number one, it's not, you know, the cattle that have been infected or that have been confirmed infected, it's about a week of them have run some fevers, some temperatures, milk production drops off. And that's really what made people notice it. Otherwise, there weren't a lot of other signs that there was really anything wrong. Just milk production dropped. You know, the risk now is just additional headline risk, right? Like, as soon as those headlines hit that a worker had been infected, the markets, that was when we saw the markets really get blasted there. I believe it was April 1st, and everyone thought it was an April Fool's Day joke. Friday, you know, the headline was that cats were getting it now, and it was the mortality rates in cats was very high, and mm-hmm. So, you know, that spooked a lot of people. And you've got a lot of these AI traders, these computers trading off the headlines. They read those headlines and they're going to blow out of their positions, or they're going to sell it, you know, to establish a position. And our question isn't so much of a, you know, do we go back to, you know, levels we were, you know, 270 on the feeder board and the 180s, 190s on the fat board. Our question is more, what makes the managed money crowd or the speculator pile back in and get long again? You know, every day there's more risk of that headline news of the next shoe to drop and scare the market and sell off. And I fully agree with a lot of the sentiment. I don't think it's a big deal, but at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter what I think. It basically matters what the consumers think and where the big money thinks. And if they're nervous or they're worried about it, it's just going to be tough to draw those dollars back into this market. So I still contend you take a step back and, you know, 250s is awfully high level. You know, if you take out the last 6 months, we'd been clamoring for 250 feeder board for a long, long time. So, you know, there's a lot of ways to manage that risk. Just need to reach out, try to figure out what works best for each producer.
Yeah. And to your point, I mean, we're on the cusp of summer grilling season. So some of that consumer sentiment and demand, we're going to have to see what that looks like here with all of this in the news. I don't think it's going to be that big of a hit here as I really take a look and examine things and we move into summer grilling season. I think maybe this hog market too has gotten a little spillover support from the downturn in cattle. I mean, summer month hogs well above, you know, getting that 107, 108, 110 range. So that market remains well supported. I just think, to your point overall here, it's a lot of unknown and, you know, the human element too. I mean, sale barns, things are still rocking there. So, I mean, it's just a matter of being smart about it in this window, isn't it, Tyler?
Yeah, it is. And you hit the nail on the head with the cash market has stayed on fire. I had a customer sell a slaughter bull the other day, brought $4,000, going to go to kill. It brought like $177. The slaughter cow market is outrageously high. A lot of that has to do with those higher, heavier weights. We got a lot more trim in the system. Need to find some lean beef to mix with it to create that hamburger mix. So some of that's just spillover from the dynamics going on in the fat cattle market. But, you know, the high cash prices are, you know, it's still a good market for the feeder calf or for the cow calf producer. It's getting a little more, you know, a little tighter margins on the backgrounder, the guy going out and buying these yearling calves and going to run them on grass. Margins have tightened up quite a bit. And it's, you know, margins on fat cattle have also tightened up. So there's some interesting plays there. You know, not everyone is going to be looking at this market the exact same way, but like I said, I'll just go back to where we're at these levels. You know, there's a long ways to where we started 2 or 3 years ago.
All right. Well, good stuff. Good thoughts. Once again, we are talking with Tyler Schau from AgMarket.net here on today's Market Talk program. And coming up, we haven't even touched the graded oilseed trade yet, even though it was a quiet day on Tuesday. We're going to talk some risk management and get some thoughts as planting season is ramping up here, or going to be ramping up across much of the country. We'll get to that with Tyler Schau from AgMarket.net coming up here on the other side of this break. We will be back with more on Market Talk here right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
The views and opinions of this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers. There is substantial risk of loss in trading futures and options, which you should carefully consider prior to trading.
Market information that matters to you on Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
We are joined today by Tyler Schau with AgMarket.net here on Market Talk as we take a look at the market action early this week. And let's segue over to grains and see if we can find something to talk about here in the grain trade, Tyler. As, again, a good day, a good couple of days in livestock. Grains, on the other hand, have been pretty quiet. I largely feel like this trade is in that mode where we're shifting to watching U.S. weather now and planting and see how progress goes. And outside of any other fresh news story, that's kind of what's going to be this driver of the trade. I know we got a report coming up on Thursday from USDA, but April WASDE is usually not a big market mover. It just feels like we're in that period where, okay, we're shifting now to watching U.S. weather, right?
Yeah, that's pretty much the dynamic that's going to run this thing for the time being. You know, we don't get the new crop balance sheets until the May WASDE. So April WASDE is just one of those where we're not likely to see a lot of fireworks. They're not going to change acre. They're not going to change anything on the supply side. They might change a little bit. You might see corn demand pick up a little bit. With the stocks number coming out about 80 million bushels lower than what was anticipated there a week and a half ago, that might cause the USDA to revise and maybe increase their corn use for ethanol and also corn export number for this current crop year. So you might see a little bit of movement there, might see ending stocks come down, still likely to be over 2 billion bushels, which is not necessarily a bullish story. The one good thing you could say is really for the last, since that prospective planting and quarterly stocks report, we've really just kind of consolidated within the high and the low of that report day. On May corn, we had a low of 426 and a high of 448. And for the last, you know, six, seven trading days, we've just kind of bounced around in there. Same story with December corn, just kind of bounced between the high and the low. The good thing on corn, the uptrend in both the May and the December from your February lows has held. So we might see some buying support here. It comes in about 428, 429 on May. And in December, it's going to come in about 465. So, you know, there's some buying support down at those levels that's holding this thing up. But it just kind of feels like the managed money crowd is they're still hanging their heads on the short side. They haven't seen enough risk come into this weather story to really shake them out of their short positions, and they're continuing to sell against some of those moving averages that are overhead, and just tough to find any momentum here. We kind of feel good about it after a day or two, and then we take a nickel to 6 cents out of corn and a dime out of beans, and we're right back where we started.
You're in North Dakota, and largely the Northern Plains is where we could see a lot of late acreage shifts depending on weather, but things in the Dakotas, really in the upper Midwest here this winter, have been pretty dry. I mean, what's your read on folks in your area here? If we could maybe see some early planting, things like that. I mean, talk to me about that. Give us some perspective there.
So big change from last year. You know, last year we were still, I wouldn't say completely white, but had a lot of snow to get rid of. The one thing about last year, we had a heck of a snowpack, had almost 100 inches of snow, and really even into early April, we were still, or late March, early April, still had snow on the ground. But we came into that very, very dry. We got big snows in October and November, which pretty much insulated the ground. We virtually had no frost, and I mean, it sucked it up within a week or two. You know, what a lot of people were betting on, I remember last April, like, man, North Dakota's never going to get the crop in the ground. And within about 2 weeks, we were dried up and farmers were rolling. Completely different scenario this year. We're actually, you know, we came in with pretty good moisture profile, at least in central North Dakota. Didn't get nearly as much snow this year. It did freeze. Here recently, we've gotten a little bit of rain, but I would suspect here in a couple weeks, it's supposed to dry out this week, supposed to be in the 70s next week. Or next weekend, you know, I would guess they'll start to see some movement and some planters out and about here over the next week to two, in North Dakota. And, you know, if we can get rolling, you know, this is usually one of the states where you'll see a lot of prevented planting. You know, the last few years we haven't seen much because we dried out so much and 21 that we were able to get a lot of stuff seeded in 22. We were able to get quite a bit seeded in 23. So it'll be interesting if it starts to rain here, which we could definitely use some rain. You know, that could back things off. The next 2 weeks, I think, will be critical as far as how this crop gets in the ground and how we push.
Yeah, and it'll be interesting to see as well if you can get in and get rolling across the Northern Plains. If there are any sort of acreage shifts or anything like that, largely that prospective plantings, you know, looked like maybe a little more spring wheat potential this year. Obviously, we're still watching that mix between corn and soybeans, but I know the Northern Plains was kind of that one area, again, where a lot of folks were going to be watching to see how this acreage mix ends up kind of finalizing it, Tyler.
Yeah, North Dakota, actually, on the prospective plantings, the really one noticeable spot was soybean acreage increasing. And that's largely a function of Green Bison, the processing plant out in Spiritwood. There's another processing plant under construction in Castleton that's supposed to be up and running here this summer, trying to work the kinks out before the new crop gets rolling. So we've got two fairly sizable renewable diesel plants that one is currently online, another one coming online. So, you know, there's been a big shift of acres in North Dakota already, or expected shift, where we're going to take some production out of corn, maybe a little out of spring wheat, a lot of it's going into beans, and then looked like quite a few acres going into canola again this year.
I know, too, this week there's a lot of key insurance planting dates that I know a lot of times that can kind of play into a farmer's overall kind of marketing plan, marketing outlook, et cetera, can it, Tyler?
Yeah, they'll be paying attention to those. You know, they're so different everywhere, and each crop has got a different planting date, and every county, even when you get into North Dakota, or several counties have different start dates, and then different end dates. So it's hard for me to tell you exactly when, but that'll play a role into, you know, when a farmer feels like they can get in the you know, and keep their insurance coverage. And then, you know, they'll run as long as they can. And, you know, the last few years we've pushed on some of those end dates. One of the things we found is farmers will still, you know, even though they go past it, they'll still put the crop in the ground, to try to get something. They might get lower coverage on their insurance, but, farmers like to farm. They don't really love to leave stuff sit idle for a year.
Very, very true. Very, very true. Well, and let's kind of wrap this up in the grains, just with some overall general reminders and thoughts with risk management here. I mean, you look at the board prices. Obviously, basis is looking like it's going to hold fairly steady in many parts of the country. But I mean, you know, getting some of those first sales going, not necessarily a bad thing, I would say, if you haven't done a whole lot of marketing of new crop. I mean, what's your general kind of reminder for folks here when it comes to their risk management right now?
Yeah, if you're behind and haven't got much done for new crop, well, let me back up. If you've still got old crop, and we know there's quite a few producers out there, the quarterly stocks report said there's some, you know, 5 or 6 billion bushels still being held by the farmer. You know, one of the things, I've had a few customers from Iowa call me today. They've seen basis really pop up here in the last few days. Went from like -8 and -10 to +5. So 15 cent pop on basis. The question was what's causing that. The best answer I've got is you've really got an end user that's been hand to mouth. They're just buying it as they need it because they think it's going to get cheaper. They have a hard time buying into this fact that we should see, you know, $5 December corn when we were facing a over 2 billion bushel carryout at the end of the year. So the end user's thinking it's going to get cheaper, so they're kind of sitting on their hands. The farmer doesn't want to sell it because they think it's too cheap compared to where it was. And so they are having to push basis a little bit to try to draw some of those bushels out of the farmer's hands. If you got basis strengthening, take advantage of it. Use the basis push to buy some type of a call or a call spread out into July to re-own some of that in case there is a weather scare. On new crop, you know, same deal, 468. Might not love it, but you know, when you're staring at 431 May right now on old crop, that's considerably better. You know, the market's giving us 37 to 40 cents more for new crop than they are old crop right now. So it might not be a bad place to start, get some hedges on, maybe look at some type of short dated put option strategy that gets us out to, you know, into June, into July, something like that.
Well, good stuff. And I know if folks have questions, they can reach out to you and the whole team there at agmarket.net very easily. Online, phone call. I know you guys have an app and much more that's been refreshed. You guys have a lot of great ways to get in touch, don't you, Tyler?
Yeah, look us up on the internet. There's a contact us page. You can find a broker in your area, and we'd love to talk to you.
Agmarket.net for all that information. Tyler Shaw with agmarket.net. Always good to talk with you, my friend. Thanks for joining us here on Market Talk today. Have a good one. We'll talk to you soon.
Good visiting with you, Jesse.
Always great to talk markets with Tyler Shaw from agmarket.net. Thanks to him for joining us here today. Let's look at some of the closing numbers real quick. Corn for May was down 4 1/4, 431 and a quarter. December corn down 4 3/4, 468 and a quarter on Tuesday. May beans 7 lower, 1174 and a half. November down 6, 1178 and a quarter. May bean meal down 40 cents a ton, 335.60. May bean oil down 38 points, 47.52. July Chicago wheat 8 1/2 lower at 5.72. December Chicago wheat was down 9 1/4, 6.12 3/4. July KC wheat down 10 1/4, 5.74 1/4. Dece KC wheat 9 1/2 lower, 6.07 1/2. July spring wheat 1 1/4 lower, 6.57 3/4. December was down 3 1/2, 6.82 3/4. Cattle had a good day again. April lives up 130, 180.70. April feeders up 140, 240.70. April hogs up 85, 90.60. Back with more here on Market Talk right after this.
Make sure to subscribe to the Market Talk YouTube channel. You can watch our latest interviews with top market analysts in the country, find bonus content, and much more. It's easy. Just go to youtube.com/@MarketTalkAg and hit the subscribe button. Or you can search for Market Talk Ag on YouTube.
If you miss an episode of Market Talk, you can listen back to the show anytime. Just search for Market Talk on your podcast platform of choice, and you can hear past episodes of the program on demand.
Keeping you informed with the latest market information for your operation. This is Market Talk. Now, back to Jesse Allen.
And thanks for sticking with us here today on Market Talk. Jesse Allen back with you here on the show. Big thanks to Tyler Shaw with AgMarket.net for joining us for our market analysis here on the day today. Let's take a look at some news headlines before we run out of time here on the show today. Well, according to a Politico report last week, Iowa Republican Senator Chuck Grassley suggested that Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer could make the Farm Bill a top priority to do between now and the summer, but warned such a move is not likely to happen. On Friday, Schumer appeared to tip his hand by making no mention of the Farm Bill in a Dear Colleague letter laying out the Senate's top priorities for the weeks and months ahead. In the letter, Schumer laid out a series of bills the Senate will try to advance in the coming months. According to Schumer, the upper chamber will take action on bipartisan bills that enhance our national security, advance online safety for kids, and promote innovation, expand the child tax credit, work on a path forward on TikTok legislation, combat the fentanyl crisis, hold failed bank executives accountable, address rail safety, ensure internet affordability, safeguard cannabis banking, outcompete the Chinese government, lower the cost of prescription drugs like insulin while expanding access to health care, and more, quote unquote. Now, conspicuously absent was any mention of the Farm Bill. What's the holdup? Well, in short, the Farm Bill has repeatedly been pushed to the back burner as Congress has struggled to function smoothly. Government funding talks dragged on for 6 extra months. The House was derailed for weeks after it deposed its speaker, and Congress has given greater priority to other stalled legislation like foreign aid bills to help Ukraine repel Russia's invasion and replenish military aid for Israel. The Farm Bill, meanwhile, has not been considered at the committee level despite a marathon of hearings in both the House and Senate. Behind the delay is a drawn-out funding battle. The Farm Bill's budget is flat, meaning there is no additional money at the committee's disposal. Some lawmakers are hoping to roll about $15 billion worth of Inflation Reduction Act funding for climate-smart agriculture into the Farm Bill baseline. However, Republicans and Democrats have been largely at a stalemate as they try to resolve these Farm Bill funding challenges. The current extension to the 2018 Farm Bill will expire on September 30th. Well, this week, the National Cattlemen's Beef Association and the Public Lands Council condemned the Biden administration's 3 finalized Endangered Species Act rulemakings that significantly expand federal overreach and rollback reforms that previously provided some relief to farmers and ranchers. NCBA President and Wyoming rancher Mark Isley says, quote, "The Biden administration's goal should be to improve the broken ESA process and to leverage partnerships with cattle producers and landowners to conserve healthy habitat. Instead, these rules drastically increase the regulatory burden on farmers and ranchers. Producers in the West are usually the most impacted by Endangered Species Act listings and habitat designations, but these rules now put every farmer and rancher in the country under the threat of a potential habitat designation, even if we are talking about private land and areas where a listed species has never lived before," end quote. Now, this slate of rulemakings also reinstates the blanket 4D rule, a one-size-fits-all approach that creates more restrictions and red tape for ranchers trying to continue normal agriculture operations and carry out voluntary conservation activities around threatened species. Well, in other news headlines, the American Farm Bureau Federation, in partnership with Farm Credit, is seeking entrepreneurs to apply online by June 15th for the 2025 Farm Bureau Ag Innovation Challenge. Now in its 11th year, this national business competition showcases U.S. startup companies developing innovative solutions to challenges faced by America's farmers, ranchers, and rural communities. The overall winner of the competition will receive $100,000 in startup funds. The runner-up will be awarded $25,000, and 2 additional business owners who advance to the Final Four round will receive $10,000. Farm Bureau is offering a total of $145,000 in startup funds throughout the course of the competition. After the application period closes, 10 semifinalist teams will be selected and announced on September 3rd. Next, the 10 semifinalist teams will pitch virtually to compete for a spot in the Final Four round of the contest. Applications must be received by 11:59 p.m. Eastern Time on June 15th. You can learn more at fb.org. Well, we see USDA says lower river flows could again be a casualty of drought in the upper Midwest and northern plains this summer and fall. USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey says NOAA's latest spring flood outlook is much drier than usual.
You're not expecting any significant spring flooding across the northern plains or the upper Midwest, a big departure from what we normally see in these outlooks.
Largely due, Rippey told USDA Radio, to longer-term changes in environmental conditions termed antecedent drought.
And then the relatively dry winter and snowless winter in some of the key watershed areas of the upper Mississippi Valley,
raising the risk of a third year of low river flows.
Given some of these antecedent conditions, drought in the upper Midwest and long-term drought looking further back, there is at least some risk that we could see low flows in some of our key watershed areas of the Mississippi and extending into the navigable waters of the middle and lower Mississippi Valley and the lower Ohio Valley.
Affecting, Rippey says, shipping of fertilizer north and grain and oilseed crops south. Not a given yet, but Rippey says something to keep an eye on. After a week in which the national average held unchanged, gas prices resumed their climb, rising 6.5 cents compared to a week ago at $3.57 per gallon. The national average is up 17.1 cents from a month ago, but 0.8 cents per gallon lower than a year ago. The national average diesel price increased 3.1 cents in the last week and stands at $4.02 a gallon, 15 cents lower than 1 year ago. And Gas Buddy's Patrick DeHaan says, quote, with oil prices rising to nearly $87 per barrel last week, their highest since October, we are not only facing the seasonal factors that push prices up, refinery maintenance, the switch to summer gasoline and rising demand, but also escalating crude oil prices, end quote. As OPEC maintains strict output cuts, oil prices have continued to find support, climbing on geopolitical escalations in the Middle East and worry about Israel and Iran attacking each other amidst rising global demand. Well, grower and industry groups from across the country have joined together to support a new coalition, the Modern Ag Alliance. The coalition seeks to protect farmers' access to critical crop protection tools to ensure a robust and affordable food supply. Working alongside federal and state policymakers, more than 60 diverse agriculture organizations led by Bayer have aligned to voice their support for legislative solutions that ensure consistency in labeling and the continued domestic availability of innovations for farming. The Modern Ag Alliance is working with agricultural partners and policymakers nationwide to reinforce the importance of science-based regulation, specifically the need to ensure any pesticide registered with the EPA and sold under a label consistent with the EPA's own determinations is sufficient to satisfy requirements for health and safety warnings. Jess Christensen, head of crop science communications for Bayer, says, quote, farmers need these critical innovations now more than ever, and certainly to ensure the continued long-term availability of products like glyphosate, end quote. And with that, we're out of time on Market Talk. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse Allen. Have a great rest of your day.